Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Wednesday, September 17, 2025 is the date. Welcome in to the Gabe Kuhn Show. I am your host, Gabe Kuhn, on @G_Kuhn71. I'm alongside the executive producer of the Gabe Kuhn Show. That'd be Connor Dunning on @C_Dunning929. Connor, how's it going, brother?
What's up, man?
We have a lot to get to. We have a lot to get to today. A lot of college football. We have overreaction, not an overreaction off the top, but we have 3 hours to talk on the way, courtesy of 92.9 FM, ESPN, and yours truly. We have some NFL, college football to get to. As far as guests are concerned, David Cobb will join the show at 5 o'clock to talk Week 4 college football. We'll look ahead, see what he thinks about this Memphis-Arkansas game. Who does he think is going to win? And then 6 o'clock, bring on my guy Colton Denning. If you need to go subscribe to all his stuff, I need to drop that for you here. Two Stripes CPD, he's the owner of. Drops his hot seat rankings every single week for college football coaches. And then make sure, as always, he does his hits of the week. Like that throwback sort of, that throwback sort of content that you used to see on YouTube. But go to youtube.com/Colton Denning and subscribe to his channel. See those hits of the week every single week. Elsewhere, we're going to have Trip Around the National Football League and the Blitz at 6:30. But before we get into an overreaction, not an overreaction, I just want to let one of our colleagues know, Jason Smith of Jason and John, that we're thinking of him today.
Absolutely.
And everybody out there that can send their love and prayers his way, make sure you do it. He lost his father today. And his father, absolutely well-known in the city as well, Les Smith, reported on over 8,000 stories, I think I saw today, in Fox 13's write-up. But Les passed away today at the age of 75. Longtime battle with lung cancer. So I just want to send my regards, my thoughts, and everything Jason's way, and I suggest everybody else do the same.
Absolutely. We're thinking about Jason. We're sending our love to him, our thoughts to him, and it's been cool to see the outpouring of love toward the Smith family, because he was a legend. Everybody, every single time you interacted with him, he was the nicest man on the planet, and everyone has good things to say about him, and for good reason. Brad and I were talking about it earlier. It's just not a single crossword about
yep.
him.
And I think we have a chip off the old block there from 11 to 2.
I think so, too.
Right here at 92.9 FM.
It is truly an honor to be able to work with somebody like Jason, and the love that he gives everybody here at the station, the support he shows. It would be poor of us to not give that back to him in a time of need.
Absolutely. But prayers, thoughts, send them the Smith family's way, because I know it's been a tough month or a couple of months, but it's definitely a tough day for Jason and his family. So just wanted to say that off the top of the show. But without further ado, let's do what we do normally on a Wednesday. Let's get to overreaction, not an overreaction.
All right, Gabe. Memphis will win this weekend versus Arkansas.
Damn it, Connor.
Overreaction, not
Damn
an overreaction.
It, Connor.
Why
the word I'm having is the one that you keep emphasizing. Will. Why you gotta say will? I'm gonna say overreaction. Will is my problem there. Can they? Absolutely. There's no question about it. Get some turnovers. Play some sturdy defense like you did against Troy. See if this offense has more of a passing game than we've seen through 3 weeks. See if Brendan Lewis can hit some deep shots. They can stretch the field. They can win this game. There's no doubt about it. And the trends, I'm the first one to mention the trends when it comes to Memphis in this golden era since 2014, the bowl streak and everything else. I'm the first one to mention that they're 5-0 in the regular season at home against power conference opponents. Like, power conference opponents don't come into Memphis and get out with a dub. That's just the truth of it. But I just look at this matchup, if I'm getting rid of those trends, I look at this matchup, and that big concern that we talked about yesterday is huge to me. Talen Green is a hell of a talent, and he's a hell of a player. And what can this Memphis defense do to neutralize him? That's my question. Because here's my innate problem. If you're not able to limit what Talen Green does, and to be clear, no one that has played Arkansas has been able to do that. He has accounted for 1,173 yards rushing and passing and has 13 touchdowns through three games. No one's been able to do it. But if you allow him to do what he's done so far this year, do I have like a whole bunch of confidence that this offense, based on what we've seen through 3 weeks, is going to be able to get a dub and a shootout? Not necessarily. If we were talking about this last year and Seth Hennigan and everybody else was on campus, sure, I could make the case that Memphis could get in a shootout with Arkansas and win it. But like this year, I don't know. It's a very run-based offense. You have a quarterback who runs with Brendan Lewis. Sutton Smith's a very talented running back. I think the offensive line has been good, but I haven't seen this pass game really open it up. So maybe they have more to offer that I haven't seen, but I'm betting right now that what we have seen is what we're going to get most weeks. And if we're going to get that against Arkansas, Arkansas has the SEC-type bodies to stand in there, limit the run like the three opponents that Memphis has played have not been able to do. And then when it comes to passing the ball, are they going to be able to take advantage of what will likely be a packed box and less guys in the defensive backfield? I don't know. I'm not sure that they're going to be able to do that. That's not necessarily what Brendan Lewis has been known for in his career. And I also look at the wide receiver room, which I've had concerns about, and I don't know if they have that number one guy that's just going to eat all the targets in that particular situation that Brendan Lewis can rely on a third down. Will is my problem. That's the only problem I have with this prompt. If you said can, 100%, I'm there. I think Memphis can absolutely win this game coming up on Saturday, but I think it's going to require a valiant effort from that defense, a good plan by Jordan Hankins, and a takeaway or two. That's how I feel.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I think that you hit the nail on the head. Will is the problem there. I don't have enough confidence to say that Memphis will win this game, but I absolutely think that they have a chance to win this game. And we talked about it for about 20 minutes yesterday. It's going to come down to making sure you contain him. I do think that you need to have a big passing play, at least one big passing play.
I think more than that. I think stretch the field and hit a couple of big shots.
I know that the running game is going to be there. I have faith that Sutton Smith and Brendan Lewis are going to be able to move a little bit. It's can he throw deep? Can they have an explosive play? Can they score quickly? I think that's going to matter. And I think the turnover thing is very, very real because we know that Arkansas can score very quickly and they can score in a big, big way. So I don't know if getting into a shootout with Arkansas is the right way to go. That defense has got to show up. And you and I were talking about it off air. If this was last year's Memphis team, I do think Memphis would
get into a shootout. Get into a shootout.
I think that Memphis would win this football game. It's just through three games this season, I don't think that I can sit here and confidently tell you what I think this team is yet. I still have some question marks about some very key pieces on this team. So it just feels like that we are really going to find out in a huge way what this Memphis football team is truly made out of. Now, it being at home gives me a little bit more confidence because teams don't just come into the Liberty Bowl and win football games. That does not happen to a high degree. You just went over all the stats right there. So, but we'll win? I don't know.
I think obviously limit big plays because this Arkansas offense has been a big play offense with Talen Green at the helm. But also, I think another stat to pay attention to, especially in the first half of that ball game coming up on Saturday, and I'll keep reminding you this, look at that third down conversion rate on the Arkansas side. Can Memphis get off the field on third down? Because Arkansas has some talented wide receivers. They have a talented quarterback. But also that quarterback, if everything breaks down on a third down, you know what's great about having legs and being a very, very strong runner of the football is you can go pick those first downs up using your legs, whether it's third and long, third and short, whatever it is. So I think if Memphis can get off the field on third down, if they can limit big plays on the defensive side, I feel fine about it. But I don't think this is a game where Memphis wants to win 48-45. I think you need to win this game more the 27-21, the 24-21, the 24-17. You need to win it in that range, and I would feel comfortable about it. But I just don't know what that's going to look like by the time we get to Saturday. I just think this team is not very tested at this moment, and they're going to be tested coming up on Saturday. That's the truth.
Is there, we've talked about all the big players in this game, I think. Is there an X factor on Memphis's side that you think could have a huge game and just change how it looks?
I, without question, am looking at one of the wide receivers, Cortez Brom or Jamari Hawkins. What can you do to change the game in the passing game? Let me know right now. Those are the X factors for me. Because defensively, I think you just sort of have to deal the entire game with Taylen Green. They're going to score. And I think Memphis will score as well. But Arkansas is going to score. I'm looking at the offensive side of the ball for Memphis. Can Jamari Hawkins, can Cortez Brom be good targets for Brendan Lewis through the air? Can they stretch the field like they have been able to through the first 3 weeks? Can you do that against an SEC opponent? Those are my X factors, looking at that wide receiver room in general.
All right, next up. A lot of officiating scrutiny behind the tush push this week. The Eagles' tush push has gone too far. Overreaction, not an overreaction.
Everyone's going to have to listen closely, okay? Because I'm about to do something that I have yet to do to date when it comes to the tush push. You ask, the Eagles' tush push has gone too far. Overreaction, not an overreaction. I'm going to say not an overreaction. But wait.
But.
Calm down. This does not mean ban it altogether. Because there's a lot of other teams around the NFL that have gotten stuff doing the same thing. I go back to the AFC Championship game last year. There were two tush pushes that the Bills tried to do against the Chiefs, and they got stuffed on both. One on the goal line, one on fourth and short when they could have potentially won the game if they converted. So, like, the Eagles are the best at it. But what I have issue with is lining up in the neutral zone, and also, more so than lining up in the neutral zone, against the Chiefs, we saw on multiple occasions, the guards for the Eagles fire off before the ball was snapped. And I know Dean Blandino, the Fox referee analyst, whatever the hell he is, he says this is an impossible play to officiate. I'm sick of it. In the end of the day, they need to get a hold on it. If they don't want people to jump off sides and false start, the officials can control that. If they don't want people lining up in the neutral zone, they can control that. They need to take it upon themselves to do that. This does not mean I want the tush push ban just because I say not an overreaction that the tush push has gone too far. It's just the way that they're executing it right now in regards to firing off too early and lining up off sides. That's it. But you know what? Referees can control that. And I don't want to hear Dean Blandino up there saying, well, it's too hard, just ban it. No! If it's too hard, get into the damn film room and realize that you need to be better as an official. You need to call these things. And that's totally okay. But just to ban it because it's too hard, that's so ridiculous. We have found every reason to try to ban this play. First, it's because it was too hard to stop. Now it's because it's too hard to officiate. And then they've tried to say, well, you know, health issues. We're scared of health and safety. Well, we have no data about that. So I don't want this play to be banned at all. I still love it, and I love that the Eagles are just throwing it in everybody's face. It's great. But at the same time, we need to officiate it better. That's where my not an overreaction comes in on this particular question. Officiate it better. Do a better job of getting a hold on the play in general. That's how I feel. And I will say this, and this is just me as a football guy, as an offensive line guy. What happens pretty consistently on short yardage plays, even if it's just a normal quarterback sneak or just a dive, a fullback dive, a halfback dive, whatever it is, offensive linemen and defensive linemen always get jumps. They always try to.
It's not a new thing.
I don't think that, you know, if you were to take away the tush push, you're going to have, you know, less issues with people jumping off sides on short yardage situations and it not getting called. It's just how it works at times. So I just think they need to get a better hold on the officiating of it. And I don't want to hear Dean Blandino, sorry ass, up there telling me it's too hard to officiate, so get rid of it. That's not a good enough excuse. Get the hell out of here.
Yeah, I don't buy that excuse at all. I think that Jason Kelce over on his Twitter account is doing a really good job of having conversations with people over why the tush push shouldn't be banned, but it absolutely needs to be officiated better. I think that everybody can agree on that, whether you are a supporter of the tush push or you're against it. It needs to be officiated better, no doubt about it. And to be honest, I'm a little frustrated to hear him get up there and say that it is difficult to officiate when I'm watching the game from my couch and I'm like, that's a false start.
Yeah,
like,
right.
You know,
right.
I'm not there.
That's
and
what
able
I'm trying to say.
Fault,
you have a line judge. You have a guy that looks right down, like he's on the line of scrimmage. It shouldn't be that complicated to one, assess a
neutral zone
infraction or a false start. Like that doesn't seem that complicated to me. But Dean Blandino gets up there and everybody gets in this big rage. Oh, well, the officials are having struggles with it. So we need to ban it. When have we ever taken the official side on anything in the National Football League? Now that it's the tush push, we take their side. I just find the whole conversation ridiculous. But I do agree that some of the neutral zone infractions and the false starts that have gone uncalled, it has pushed the tush push conversation a little bit too far. I think they need to get a hold of it.
Well, because I am still a proponent of the tush push in and of itself is not unfair. When they are allowed to line up in the neutral zone and have false starts, it becomes a little bit unfair. That is a huge advantage that the Eagles are going to have. Now, I do want to ask you this. A lot of people in Jason Kelsey's comments are bringing up that it should be illegal to be able to push a ball carrier. And it used to be illegal, but it is not illegal anymore. What is your take on that? Should it go back to being illegal to be able to push a ball carrier? Or is it still my biggest guys versus your biggest guys?
I like that.
Can you stop the ball?
I'm fine with pushing a ball carrier. Does anyone have an issue, by the way, when somebody comes up short and they, like a tight end, they throw a stick route on 3rd and 6? And he's 2 yards short.
And the pile moves.
And here comes the O-lineman pushing their guy across the
I like it when that happens.
And I don't usually see people have issue with that, but when it's short yardage and the tush push, people have an issue. I don't have a problem with pushing ball carriers. If people do, that's your opinion. But I don't have an issue with that because I think it should be a part of the game. It's a physical game. And it's a game, you know. Go Al Pacino. It's a game of inches, okay? And however you can get those inches, those yards, you go ahead and do that. And if that requires you to push a ball carrier, I'm all for it.
Yeah, it's – and Colin Cowherd was recently trying to argue that pushing a ball carrier isn't a football play. And I just think I fundamentally disagree with
that.
It is a football play.
How – what's the argument? Do we have any understanding of what the argument would be that it's not a football play to push your own – player across a first down line or across the goal line? I don't know if you could really make a salient argument to me that I would listen to on that. I don't know how you say it's not a football play. We love to talk about what is and what isn't a football play. And a lot of people, and trust me, I am not. I am the anti, you didn't play football so you can't talk about it. I'm not that guy.
Well,
okay? But I am very aware of the fact that a lot of the people that have these takes have never really played the game of football. The guys that tune in and always talk about what is and what isn't a football play usually have not been on the field playing football. And I have a bit of an issue with that, but I'm not the guy that's like, oh, you haven't played the game, so you can't speak on it. If you're learning the game, I tip the cap to you. But too much conversation about what is and what isn't a football play. If you see it on a Sunday, if you see it on a Saturday, you know, probably a football play. Not that complicated.
Well, and I do think that some people have also brought up the point, if the tush push was to be banned, then they're just going to run a QB sneak anyway.
And they'll
and
get
it's
it.
Going to be the same
because,
thing. It's going to be the same thing.
Jalen Hurts squats 650 pounds.
I think –
good interior offensive linemen, and they have massive tackles.
We'll talk about Jalen Hurts in just a moment, but I do think that what is continuously lost in the tush-push conversation is one of the main reasons it is so successful for the Eagles.
It's because the Eagles do it.
Is because it's Jalen Hurts. He is the perfect quarterback to run it. And if you ban the tush-push, I promise you, they're just going to run a QB sneak, and it's going to be the same damn thing.
This is my advice to defenses that are trying to stop the tush push. against the Eagles, because they find a way to stop the tush push against everyone else, just to be very clear about it. Josh Allen doing it didn't work. I remember the Ravens last year put Mark Andrews at quarterback, didn't work. You know what I mean? Like, other teams struggle with this, the Eagles don't, and now it's a problem. But if I was giving advice to a defense on how to stop the tush push, tell your linebackers to push their D linemen just like Jalen Hurts is getting pushed by his running backs and his tight end behind him. Like, don't leave your feet. Don't submarine. You push force against force, and you may have a chance to stop it. You know what I'm saying?
And I mean, Jason Kelce was also – I think if Jason Kelce's just – I know he's an Eagles guy. I know.
But he's being fair. He's
being
very fair.
Very fair in his comments. And he is pointing out that during regular QB sneaks that the Eagles ran – from 2016 to 2021, they had an over 90% effective rate. So that's what I'm saying is, like, when they were running it without neutral zone or without false starts or even without Jalen Hurts, they were still effective. I think it is about how you practice it. I think it's about the linemen that you have. And what have we known about the Philadelphia Eagles for the last decade? They've had one of the best lines in the NFL.
You know, ban Cam Jurgens, ban Steen. Ban Mekhi Becton. I know he's with the Chargers now. Ban Jordan Mailata. Ban Lane. Ban all of them.
When Jason Kelce was there, remember some of the conversation was, well, Jason Kelce isn't in your center anymore. You're not going to be as effective with the tush push.
Well, now Cam Jurgens is.
Guess what? They're just as effective, if not better, at it. Now, I think that they have just perfected the play over time. And listen, they've got to officiate it correctly. You cannot allow the Eagles to line up in the neutral zone. You cannot allow them to get false starts. I do think it will take away some of the effectiveness of it if you are officiating it correctly. I just don't want to hear from the officiating crews. It's too hard to officiate. When, again, from my couch, before the play even starts, I'm going, that guy looks like he's in the neutral zone.
It's coming from the same officials that missed Jawan Taylor lining up off, line.
We did this with the Chiefs last season.
They miss that constantly. I don't want to, like, it's way easier than you're making it right now. And again, I think it's a sorry ass excuse to say it's too hard to officiate. Just get rid of it.
And again,
do your job.
Listen, the whole it is hard to officiate.
NFL officials get paid handsomely to do what they do.
Yes, they do.
That's what the money's for.
It is difficult to officiate. Yes, I understand that. The game moves very quickly. They're sitting still. This is quite literally a problem that happens when they are not moving. So don't give me that crap. Oh, it's moving fast. It's too hard to see. There is no movement. There's no movement at all going on. So I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it. All right, staying with the Eagles. Jalen Hurts has only thrown for 253 yards and has yet to throw a touchdown pass through 2 weeks. This, per usual, calls into question their passing game and offense in general. The Eagles' passing game will be okay. Overreaction, not an overreaction.
I talked about this a bit yesterday, but not an overreaction. And I honestly, they're 2-0. They've beaten two pretty good teams. Like, I'm not going to sit here and act like the Eagles are screwed and that their passing game's never going to get going, because I've learned from the past. I learn from history, which is something I think that writ large we need to do in this world. But we do this song and dance every single year when they win games and it looks ugly. Sometimes they lose games and it looks ugly. But Jalen Hurts, more often than not, when it matters, delivers. There's a reason he's a Super Bowl MVP. There's a reason that 2 years ago when he played the Chiefs in the Super Bowl and lost, he was the best quarterback out there and outplayed Patrick Mahomes, even though Patrick Mahomes won a Super Bowl MVP. There's a reason that he's been near the top of the NFL the past 2 years in chunk plays, pass plays of 20-plus yards downfield. Like, they may not have it now, but I have a hunch, because history has told me they're going to figure it out. They're too good of a team. Jalen Hurts is too good of a quarterback, too smart of a quarterback. I think Nick Sirianni's too good of a coach, too smart of an offensive mind, for them to consistently have struggles throwing the ball and throwing the ball downfield, stretching the defense. So I think that's the quick answer there. They're going to be fine. They're going to be okay. They're 2-0 right now. Jalen Hurts has just made the plays to win these first two games. If it calls for him to hit A.J. Brown 9 times for 200 yards, at some point he will probably do that. But I'm tired of doing the same thing every single year and then getting to a point where we still have the same talking points where Jalen Hurts completes a bunch of 20-yard plus passing plays and this offense is humming. They're going to be fine. They're going to be okay.
I feel like we all have amnesia. Jalen Hurts, three football games ago, won the Super Bowl MVP by being by far the best quarterback out there, and he did it in large part with his arm.
Yes.
What are we talking about? We've seen him do it before. We've seen the Eagles do it before. To be quite honest with you, I haven't minded their strategy one bit. Their strategy is, we're going to take care of the football, run the ball down your throat because we have Jalen Hurts and this guy, don't know if you've heard of him, Saquon Barkley, that we're going to hand the ball off to every once in a while.
And our defense is pretty damn good.
That's my next point I was getting to. The Eagles don't have to score a ton of points. You know why? Because they have an elite defense. They got to score like 24 points a game, and they're going to win.
Yeah. Do I want to see them at some point this year? Do I want to see them at some point this year score 40?
Sure.
Yeah, but I think they will. So I'm not going to sit here and panic about the Eagles and their passing game through 2 weeks because I've learned from the past that it'll figure itself out. It just will. There's a reason they won the Super Bowl. There's a reason the Jalen Hurts won Super Bowl MVP. It wasn't just legs in the Super Bowl. He was able to air it out and make big plays downfield to his wide receivers. And their wide receivers are good, by the way. And they have a good tight end when he gets back healthy. Dallas Goedert, AJ Brown, and Devontae Smith, they can get open. Jalen Hurts can hit them. We've seen it in the past. Everybody, let's drop this constant narrative that pops up every single season. They will figure it out.
It feels like we can't really do the Lamar Jackson's a running back thing anymore. So people are like, oh, we're going to do it with Jalen Hurts now. It's like, we don't have to do it with Jalen Hurts. Yes, Jalen Hurts uses his legs probably more often than he uses his arm right now during the regular season. But I think it is a strategy by the Eagles because Jalen Hurts is extremely efficient. He does not turn the ball over. That is what he does. He has thrown the ball 45 times this year, and he has 34 completions and no interceptions. He has no touchdowns, I understand, but no interceptions. He will not turn the ball over because
he knows.
And that's
why they've won these first two games.
That is why, again, Chris Jones walked up to the line and said, oh, you haven't thrown or you don't have stats or anything like that. And he's like, we won the game.
Yeah, shut the hell up.
There are Hall of Famers that did the exact same thing. Jalen Hurts is just playing 70s quarterback. That's what he's doing.
Kind of.
All right?
But there has been times where he's gone 2010's quarterback and aired it out for 300 yards.
He threw for 3,800 yards two seasons ago. Yeah, we can do it.
He doesn't have to do it.
We
don't need to do the same song and dance every single year, I promise.
Again, he's a Super Bowl MVP, all right? I'm not going to freak out over two because of two games.
They won!
They didn't even lose the games! I feel like we're all taking crazy pills. Like, listen, I understand it's not fun to watch if he's your fantasy quarterback. I guess you're getting touchdowns on the ground, but like, it is, the stats aren't there. I understand it. He's a winning quarterback. He wins football games. And at the end of the day, what is an NFL team supposed to do?
Win
football games.
Correct.
You know what's not cool? Throwing for 4,000 yards in a season and winning six or seven games.
Shout out Joe Burrow on that one.
All right, final one. The Clippers will be punished by the NBA for subverting the NBA salary cap. Overreaction, not an overreaction.
Listen, I want to hear your opinion very heavily on this, Connor, but okay. I'm going to say overreaction. But I do think there's going to be some level of penalty because you look at the CBA, Pablo Torre put this out there on his podcast. He's been the one that's been all over this aspiration Kawhi Leonard, Steve Ballmer thing. You can punish circumstantial evidence per the CBA. And I think all this is circumstantial. There's no like full-on email saying, hey, make sure that you pay Kawhi Leonard because we're subverting the salary cap. Because, listen, Steve Ballmer's he may be dumb for how this has looked and how this has played out, but he's not dumb enough to do that. So I think there will be some level of punishment. I don't think it'll be Kawhi Leonard and avoided contract and Steve Ballmer being suspended and paying a $7.5 million fine. I don't see that happening. But I do kind of want your opinion on this, Connor, because we have been talking about this following this very closely and talking about it heavily.
I think that there will be some sort of punishment for the Clippers. I don't know what it's going to look like, but there's so much evidence now that, yes, it is still circumstantial, but some of it isn't. There is a paper trail that leads directly back to the Clippers.
And Kawhi Leonard getting money in his pocket, and Uncle Dennis making calls.
Right. So there is evidence that the Clippers did something. It's very funny that I watched all the President's Men last night before we discussed this. But basically what's happening now is it is going to be on Pablo Torre or the investigators for the NBA to be able to prove that Steve Ballmer, Richard Nixon, knew about what was happening with the Los Angeles Clippers. That seems like the final piece left. However, we know that Aspiration was giving Kawhi Leonard money. We know that Wong gave Aspiration money when they were going under. But we know that Steve Ballmer gave Aspiration money.
He's not texting the heads of Aspiration saying,
right.
Hey, make sure you pay Kawhi Leonard because we want to subvert the cap. That's not going to be out there. But I feel like the evidence is so, even though it's circumstantial, is so heavily pointing
it's a giant arrow that's pointing towards
subversion.
Steve Ballmer.
Cap subversion.
Right. Oh,
that's
by
what
the
it's
way,
pointing to.
He did this before.
Yes.
He's been fined
and
before
Kawhi
doing
Leonard,
it.
And Kawhi Leonard, there's a trail of him asking other organizations to do this for them and them denying it.
Here's what I'll say. I don't think it's a coincidence that today on ESPN, their front page story from Baxter Holmes is Kawhi Leonard and the tumultuous era he has had in Los Angeles, and you have team officials talking about how difficult it's been, how they wanted to move off of him. It feels to me like the Clippers have kind of... Maybe. I don't know if you can make Kawhi the fall guy without having punishment yourself.
Correct.
I think that the Clippers deserve punishment. I think they will be punished in some sort of way. You cannot allow this to happen in the NBA. You, even though he is your buddy... You know, Adam Silver, I know that he's your friend. I know he's the richest owner in the NBA, but you've got to punish him. I also think it's insane that he's on the audit board when it comes to salary cap circumvention. Just crazy. Because he's been caught doing this before.
Is the punishment just going to take, they're going to take him off that board?
I don't know.
In the end of the day, even though I believe I know what happened here, and I think most people believe they know what happened here, it's still hard for me to believe Adam Silver is going to be heavy-handed to his buddy Steve.
I wonder, stay with me here, I wonder how many people within the Clippers wouldn't hate the idea of Kawhi Leonard's contract becoming void. I'm just saying.
But if that were to happen, that means other things would happen to the Clippers. They would lose.
Right.
They would lose
maybe
a bunch of probably forfeit draft capital.
They ain't got them.
That's a good point. But, like, other things would happen. If it came to the point where Kawhi Leonard's salary is being voided and he can't sign back with the Clippers, I think other things would have happened to the Clippers at that
maybe
point.
Now, I do think there needs to be a conversation about, we read off what The Athletic and The New York Times are reporting, what could be the potential penalties for the Clippers. The fines? It's a drop in the water. It's a drop in the ocean for Steve Ballmer. It doesn't really. So that's why my line of thinking here is, at what point do the Clippers look at this whole situation and say, okay, if these are the punishments that are coming or could be coming, Kawhi's contract gets voided. We don't have to pay Kawhi anymore. We don't have to build around him anymore, which we already don't want to do. Ballmer gets suspended for a season. That's a bit, big deal, kind of, I guess. I don't even really know what that even means. You can't go to the games. I get whatever.
And he's also not a personnel decision maker. He's
right.
More like the money guy, and I think he could still spend money even though he's suspended.
Right. Like, whatever. So the fines toward him would be nothing. Now, the people within the Clippers should be worried because people could get fired.
Yes.
Suspensions for them matter in a huge way because they're not Steve Ballmer rich. You know, they have real jobs that are up for grabs if they get the hammer. But if you're Steve Ballmer and you are looking at this situation and you are saying, okay, realistically, I get off of Kawhi's contract, I've got to pay fines that I make in a day that doesn't even bother me. Really, the only real penalty here for the Clippers would be the loss of draft picks.
Yeah,
it feels like that would be the major, major thing because they already do not have a treasure chest of draft picks because of the initial Paul George and Kawhi moves anyway. I do wonder if he is weighing whether or not to accept some of these penalties because it would get them off that contract.
I'm curious. I don't know. But clearly he loves him some Kawhi Leonard or else he wouldn't have tried to strike this type of deal.
This doesn't feel like a coincidence. ESPN, who had Steve Ballmer on, by the way,
yes,
right after the story broke,
good point.
Telling me there's a coincidence that there's a kind of hit piece
on Kawhi.
On Kawhi today.
We'll see.
Uh-huh.
We'll see. Listen, I'm skeptical, but listen, the evidence here, you can say it's circumstantial. It seems overwhelming to me. And I think it seems overwhelming to most people. All right, now, you know what we do on Wednesday, right after we get out of Overreaction, Not an Overreaction? Time for my post-Week 2 NFL power rankings. And I will tell you, I have a big shakeup at number one. I have a new number one this week. Stick around for that.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
So after week one, my post-week one NFL power rankings were as follows. I had the Eagles at number one, the Bills at number two, Packers at number three, Ravens at number four, and Chargers at number five. I have a big, big shakeup in the post-week two NFL power rankings. Let's go ahead and get to number five. I'm keeping the Chargers at number five. 2-0, Justin Herbert looks like he's taking a step, taking care of the football. And what's been impressive to me about that Chargers offense is Greg Roman's the offensive coordinator. If you remember Greg Roman from his time in the National Football League, he was with the 49ers when Colin Kaepernick and Jim Harbaugh were there, and they ran the ball very heavily. That's what they did. Used the quarterback's legs, did things like that. The passing concepts kind of lag behind the modern era, but it seems like he's gone somewhere else to learn some modern-day passing concepts, and you have a quarterback in Justin Herbert who is executing them at a very high level. They seem to have a good brain trust going on. I really like it. And then defensively, it's kind of funny. We talked about it yesterday. But they don't really have star power. But what Jesse Minter has done on the defensive side of the ball is just told other quarterbacks, don't make mistakes. Make sure you stay patient. I watched Geno Smith that entire game on Monday Night Football just lose his patience, try to take these deep shots, and the Chargers made him pay for it every single time. You have to dink and dunk and dink and dunk if you want to beat the Chargers defense. They don't necessarily have that star power, but they play really good team ball. They've been very impressive. That's why they're in my number five spot. I'm going to go with the Ravens again. Still think they're the most talented team outside of the Eagles from a roster perspective in the entire National Football League. It's impossible to deal with Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson. Although I will give credit to the Cleveland Browns, held them to a very, very nasty rushing day on Sunday. But the Ravens, I just need to see their defense take a step. I truly do. If I'm going to believe in them, you know who my preseason Super Bowl pick was? It was the Baltimore Ravens. I thought that secondary, who was 24th in pass yards allowed per game last year, I thought they would take a massive step. But we saw week one, them get absolutely killed by the Bills. 394 passing yards by Josh Allen. I need to see them take a step in the right direction with their passing defense, and I just have not seen it yet. I want to move them up this list. I truly do, but I need to see more from a balanced perspective from that team writ large. I can't just watch Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry and Zay Flowers do all the heavy lifting every single week if I want to believe that they're going to be around in February. Number three, I'm going to go with the Bills. Bills are dropped a spot. They're dropped a spot in my rankings this week, and that's not really through fault of their own. They handled business. They won 30-10 against the Jets. They made Justin Fields look completely out of sorts before knocking him out of the game. He was 3-for-11 for 27 yards. They limited the rushing game. I'm not a huge believer in their defense, but at the same time, I look at their offensive side of the ball and Josh Allen, Keon Coleman coming into his own. I'm a big believer in that. James Cook in that game against the Jets. Jets seemingly have a good defense and a decent run defense. James Cook, 21 carries for 132 yards and two touchdowns in that game. So I think they have a well-rounded offense. Need to see more from the defensive side of the ball, very similarly to the Ravens. But I think the Bills are a top-three team in the National Football League. The Eagles. Going with the Eagles at number two. I'm not discouraged by what I've seen through 2 weeks, but I think it's pretty simple. I'll put them back at number one as soon as I see Jalen Hurts have the type of game that I expect Jalen Hurts to have in the coming weeks. Throw the ball around, be more balanced on offense, and then I will believe in you a whole lot more because I think the defense is supremely talented, very, very good. Offense, supremely talented, very, very good. But they're playing not to lose the game in a lot of ways, in my opinion, instead of playing to win. Now, I understand that when you quote-unquote play to win, you could put the ball in harm's way, and Jalen Hurts and that offense, they know that if they just take care of the football, they can win ball games. But I want to see that offense be more dynamic because you're going to need that by the time you get into January and February and you're playing tough playoff games. Number one, this is my big shakeup this week. I'm going with the Green Bay Packers. I have seen all I need to see from that Green Bay Packers team. They're a balanced football team. I think they're a top five offense. I think they're a top five defense. Now, Jordan Love is kind of the wild card here. We know that in the past he can be a little bit erratic with the football, but so far this year, four touchdowns, no interceptions. He's been very good with the football, even throwing the ball into tight windows. I think wide receiver-wise, they have what they need, even though they lost Jaden Reed. Matthew Golden's going to come along week by week by week, their first-round pick from this year. Romeo Doubs has looked really good. Tucker Kraft, I mean, who knew? To be honest with you, I didn't know. Six catches for 124 yards and a touchdown in that Thursday night game against the Commanders where they won 27-18. But on the defensive side of the ball, you added Micah Parsons. He's got 1.5 sacks through two games, even though he's played, I think, about 50 to 60% of the snaps. He hasn't played all the snaps. But one thing that just is amazing about that team is their run defense. Their run defense is, in my opinion, the best in the National Football League through 2 weeks, and it looks like it'll stay that way as long as they don't have some rash of injuries. But week one, they play the Lions, who, by the way, hung 52 on the Bears in week two. So everybody who was freaking out about the Lions' offense and how many coaches they had to switch over and all the linemen they lost, they figured it out week two. They just played a really good team in the Packers week one. But against the Lions in week one, Lions in 2024 were the number three rushing offense in the National Football League. They held them to 22 carries for 46 yards. No touchdowns. They get into week two against the Commanders, who are the number four rushing offense in 2024. And Jaden Daniels was completely neutralized with his legs. They only had 19 carries for 51 yards. No touchdowns. So that Packers team is very legitimate. It feels like Jordan Love's taking that next step. It feels like that defense is one of the best, if not the best, in the National Football League. So the Packers, to me, based on what I've seen through 2 weeks, they are the best team in the National Football League. Do you have any issues, Connor?
I don't think I have any issues. I don't know if I would put them number one, but I think that your top five is the top five I feel everybody should have for the NFL through the first 2 weeks of the season. I did want to ask you, does the receiving core for the Packers give you any pause just because they haven't been able to stay healthy? It feels right. Like the last three seasons. I know that they have Tucker Kraft now, but
sure.
You know, Jaden Reed's out with a broken collarbone.
I get what you're saying. It does give me a little bit of, you know, pause, but they have so many guys that are capable. They don't necessarily have that number one guy, and maybe Matthew Golden by week 9, week 10 could be that guy. Maybe Jaden Reed gets back healthy and he steps back into that role. But Matthew Golden, good wide receiver. Romeo Doubs, good wide receiver any given week. Dontavion Wicks, good wide receiver any given week. Malik Heath, good wide receiver any given week. And then you have Christian Watson who will be coming back and you have Jaden Reed. So, like, I get where people come from. Most people think you have to have that number one certified wide receiver. But I think they are one of the few cases we've seen in the past. And I guess you could go Aaron Rodgers with this as well, although he had Greg Jennings at times and early in his career, I guess Donald Driver was there. But, like, I think they kind of did that back in the day with Aaron Rodgers, with the Alan Lazard, and before Davante Adams became Davante Adams, they're doing the receiver by committee thing. And I think they have five or six guys who you can throw out there on any given down, and they can make a big play for you, a big splash play. So I get the concern with not having that certified number one guy, but I think they have a wide receiver room filled with number twos at this moment, if that makes sense. Just a lot of really productive, good route running, good-handed wide receivers.
Do you think Caleb Williams is good enough to get it done? Or not Caleb Williams, Jordan Love.
Jordan Love? What do you mean get it done?
Win a Super Bowl.
Why not? But we'll see. I'm gonna push the pause on that for now. But I think that whole team, because it's 22 guys, So I think that team has the talent to win a Super Bowl. I don't know if I'm just gonna like immediately make some proclamation that Jordan Love's a Super Bowl quarterback, but we've seen some things in the past with quarterbacks where they win. I mean, Trent Dilfer, I know it's a different day and age. Brad Johnson,
listen, as much as I love him, Peyton Manning, Jordan Love
to me is a top 10 quarterback in the National Football League. So I'd just ask you, throw that back at you and say why would he be incapable of winning a Super Bowl?
I'm not saying he isn't.
Right.
Not saying he is incapable.
I would say sure. I could see him winning a Super Bowl, but
defense is that good.
In the end of the day, seeing's believing. I gotta see him roll through this.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Season, got to see what the injury situation looks like. Now, I was asking myself the question, what other teams outside of this top five are very, very close? And I came up with a little short list, three teams. I would put the Rams right outside looking in.
Yep.
By the time I get to the third one, you're just going to laugh so hard. I would put the Buccaneers on the outside looking in. And then my third one, you're going to laugh so unreasonably hard. I think the Colts are closer than you think right now. I need to see it. I need to see it for a couple more weeks. I do. But they have played really good football through 2 weeks. Now, here's the other thing of that. Like, I watched the Saints. What is it? The Saints last year hang 40 on two teams and start 2-0, and they lost the rest of their games damn near. So, like, I get it. I get where people are not going to just immediately, crown the Colts, especially with Daniel Jones at quarterback. But I've seen a lot out of Daniel Jones through 2 weeks, and I've seen a lot out of that defense through 2 weeks. That win over the Broncos was very good, and they did it late-game scenarios. They played good situational football. They did everything it takes to be a winning team in the National Football League.
Where are the Lions?
I think they're right there as well. Sorry, I guess I should have added them to my short list. They did score 52 points.
Did I miss here that they weren't?
Am I taking crazy pills?
Yeah, am I taking crazy
but no,
pills?
Yeah, the Lions. I put the Lions in there. Okay. We'll go four. We'll go four on the short list.
All right. Thank you
for correcting me.
Acceptable.
Thank you for correcting me. I'm not too proud to admit I'm wrong sometimes.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Will Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.